The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
Well, I saw the thing coming out of the sky. It had one big horn and one big eye. I commenced to shake it and I said, "Woo-wee! It looks like a purple people eater to me." It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me. Well, he came to Earth and he landed in a tree. And I said, "Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me." I heard him say in a voice so gruff,
"I wouldn't eat you, because you're too tough."
He said that wasn't the reason he came to land. He wanted to get a job in a rock and roll band. Well, bless my soul. Rock and roll, flying purple people eater, pigeon toed, underground, flying purple people eater. We wear short shorts. Friendly little people eater, what a sight to see.
Brought to you by WKTV. I'm Wayne Thomas. Welcome to another episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. As always, we ask that you please keep an open mind about things that you might not easily believe as we explore the mysterious. Our featured guest tonight might be the Madam of Mysterious. You guys will get a taste of that in just a minute. But first, let's meet my co-hosts, Brandon and Kim.
Hi, I'm Kim Colleen.
Hi, I'm Brandon Jose.
Now, you guys both have been with our featured guest many times on this show. What are you guys looking forward to?
See where the conversation goes. I don't know where we're going with this one.
I'm ready to hear some good stories, because didn't you take some road trips?
Yes, I did.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. That's where we want to start. So you might want to say, well, you have a long list of your bio is quite long. You're an author, award-winning author and journalist. You're an investigator. You have your own team. You are also the lead investigator for the North American chapter of Dogman Project. Is that right?
I'm the lead investigator for the Michigan chapter of the North American Dogman Project. Yes.
So, and then you do a podcaster with Into the
Illuminati. I am also a teacher.
And a teacher and a lecturer, and you do lectures.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We might have left some stuff out. I'd like to cover each one of those sometime tonight and just see where you're at in those different areas. But
that could take up a whole episode.
I know, but we want to catch up. Like Kim said, you've been out on events and you've had some stuff developing with your writing. So we want to cover those two things to start with. So whatever you like to talk about, Shatan, welcome.
Well, we can talk about my trips from June up until now. That'll probably take 10 minutes at least.
Yeah.
So my adventure began. My first destination was the historical Hoover House in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. I stayed there for 3 nights as a guest of the owners. It is a haunted bed and breakfast. The spirits there are actually pretty easy to deal with. Except the first night I was there, I had gone into Gettysburg, had dinner with some friends of mine who were vacationing there. And then I came back and we did a podcast. And so after the podcast was done, they were filming for a TV series actually inside the Hoover House. So I went out to my truck, got my stuff, got my dog, went up to my room and was confirming plans with my friends for the next day. And during the course of me texting back and forth with her, there is a small dresser that is just across from the bed that I'm actually sitting on. And out of the corner of my eye, I'm watching my hard-cased investigation box that has all my paranormal equipment. I'm watching it being pushed to the edge of the dresser. And I jump up and I put my hand in front of it. I push it back. I said, we're not going to do that tonight. And so I didn't get any activity the rest of the day, which was great, or that night. So I was like, okay, already it's starting stuff. So the next morning I got up and they had told me, so I got up at 9 thinking, you know, I will get downstairs, have breakfast. I'll go to Gettysburg. We'll spend the day investigating. So I come down on the service elevator because I had my three little dogs with me and they were in their stroller. Anytime we were inside of the bed and breakfast, they were confined to their stroller. So we get out, we come into the back kitchen area. I can hear what sounds like conversations going on in the dining room area. Muffled, you know, conversations. I really can't make out any distinct words or anything, but I can hear muffled conversations. And considering I'm behind a set of closed doors and a wall, I'm like, okay, they're up, so I will come back in. Now, it didn't occur to me that I didn't smell anything cooking. The lights were off in the kitchen. So I thought, well, maybe they just haven't started yet. So took my dogs out, walked them, exercised them, and locked it because I have one of those awesome panels on the outside that you can lock and unlock it. And went back in to, you know, say good morning to everybody, have breakfast, walk into the dining room area, and there's nobody there. Come to find out, I'm the only person in the building. And of course, there's nothing to be heard. It's totally quiet. So I'm like, okay, well played, ghost, well played. You made me think I was going to get breakfast, and then you changed it around on me. So I was like, okay, good one. So I took the opportunity to go around, take pictures of all the other rooms, common area rooms that, you know, because nobody was there. I was just by myself. So then I headed into Gettysburg, spent the whole day there, you know, looking at monuments, going to different sites. Went to the covered bridge that's just outside of the touristy part of Gettysburg, Stush's Bridge. There's supposed to be lots of paranormal activity there. Unfortunately, now that's like where all the amateur paranormal investigators go because it's free. And they literally set up like a paparazzi and are, you know, filming, taking pictures, EVPs, totally isolating anything. It's all contaminated, walking across the bridge. So you really can't decipher what is true paranormal activity and what's not. Now the next night or the next day, we decided, me and my friends, that we were going to go to Maryland and go look for megalodon shark teeth. It was a fun adventure. We drove down there. Now I will say that the cicadas were out in full force. So it was like a horror. It was like the soundtrack to a horror movie. From like Getty's driving down the Beltway in Maryland, we're watching the cicadas like ping off of other people's vehicles, motorcycle riders. You know, I'm just like, wow, it's horrible. So we got down into Maryland, looked for shark teeth, didn't really find any at the location that we were at, but my dogs had a fabulous time. They were playing in Chesapeake Bay, digging in the beaches. They were very very fascinated by what was mom looking for in the sand. Because here I am down on all fours digging in the sand trying to find teeth. So my little boy Connor, who is a Pinapoo, they're a year old now, but he's like digging the sand with me. And then his sister and his mom were playing in the wet sand. So for them, it was a fantastic part of the trip. They got to really enjoy themselves. For us, we got wet, we got sandy, we got suntans. We did get to go to the Culver Marine Museum, which was always nice because they have lots of prehistoric shark teeth on display. They have lots of other fossils, but I go for the shark teeth. I mean, come on. Now, the interesting thing is when we got back to my bed and breakfast that I was staying at, they dropped me off. And it was, I want to say it was a little bit before 9 o'clock Saturday night. So got back. And of course, I've been wading through Chesapeake Bay. I have sunscreen on, I have bug spray on, I have sand on. And it was my last night there. So the owners wanted to do it. Well, I had my choice. There was either, I could either go on another ghost investigation at a orphanage that was nearby, or I could do a table tipping session with them there at the home. So I opted for the table tipping session, which was very, very interesting. And for those people who are out there doubting, you know, at first we started off with a very light round little end coffee table, but then we switched over to a very ornate, very heavy round coffee table. It probably weighed about 70 pounds. It was heavy enough that I had to put some effort into it. I, you know, wanted to see how easy I could push it. Couldn't push it that easy. It was actually moving, and I was able to capture on editing everything. It'll be up on my YouTube channel, but we actually were able to capture it responding to our questions and tilting, turning, sliding. Very, very interesting stuff. So that was...
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, Shatan. I'm not familiar with that at all. Brandon, are you familiar with that?
No, but I've seen a little bit of videos of people doing it.
Yeah, it's... No, I completely trust the people who I was there doing this with. They're very legitimate investigators. They are very well spoken for in the Gettysburg area and the Pennsylvania Paranormal Societies. So I completely trust them. And I knew... I could see where everybody's hands were. I could see where their legs were. They weren't using their legs to manipulate it at all. And I could see that they weren't putting any more pressure on the table than I was. We had very light touches on there and it was responding. And it was very, very interesting. Now, so we got the activity going with the ghosts and we did about an hour session with them. And then, so it's getting close to midnight and I know that I have to be up around 5 o'clock in the morning because from Gettysburg area, I'm driving to Port Henry, New York, which is about a 7 hour trip. So, and I still need a shower at this point. So I get the shower done, get the dog settled in for the night. I go to bed and this was the weekend that it was 90 degrees there. And so the first two nights had been very comfortable, but the longer I tried to sleep, the colder the room got. And I was covered up with like a nice quilted blanket, a light blanket, you know, underneath that and a sheet. So it kept on getting colder and colder and colder. And my two Pinapoos, Connor and Tygan, love cold because they're furry, they're fluffy, they don't like the heat. But even they started to get uncomfortable and whining at me. Their mom was throwing a temper tantrum. And it's at this point that I start to hear what I think are footsteps walking around the upstairs. Now, of course, my brain's foggy and I'm like, well, it's probably the other person who's staying up here. But come to find out, I was the only one staying on that floor that night. So something was walking around, making the floor creak. The dogs were reacting to it because they growled at it. They you know, made some vocalizations towards it, like, hey, get away from us, get away from our room. but I could definitely hear somebody moving around and walking. Yeah. And the room kept on getting colder and colder and colder until I was like, I'm done. I have to get up. I have to get moving. So I got up, got dressed, as quiet as I could, took, you know, the dogs down to the truck. And then we were on the road for Port Henry in New York.
Wait, so now, is that a famous bed and breakfast where you were staying?
No, actually, they just opened it as a bed and breakfast as of January this past year. And really just opened it up to taking reservations for people to stay there in April, because of course COVID had things shut down. So, but they have been investigating and documenting for the past, you know, 6 months or more activity there. And I think I got some really interesting personal experiences with it, with just what I saw and what I experienced there.
Okay, they knew they were haunted. Did they have instruments where they were taking measurements?
Well, so see, the historical Hoover House, it started out as a family residence, but the father, the mother, and the daughter, the Hoovers, all died in the home.
Oh.
And then it became it was sold to another family. It became a multi-generational home until the last people moved out of the home. And then it became a nursing home where numerous people died throughout the years. They had, you know, each room was was somewhere that somebody was living and staying in. And so they had multiple deaths there over the years. Then it went on to become a restaurant on two different occasions. Then it sat vacant for a number of years, and now it's been bought by Pamela Barry and her husband, and James Warwick, all from Keystone Paranormal. And the Barrys own Gettysburg Ghost Exchange, which is a store in Gettysburg. So they knew it was haunted. Actually, when they were doing the walkthrough with a realtor, James swears that he heard a voice tell him, sign the papers.
Oh.
And so he did. They insisted on getting it, you know, right then and there.
Wow. Do you think that the ghosts that are in that bed and breakfast are the Hoovers then? Or do you feel it's like the nursing home people?
You know, I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
I do think combination of both, and they have gotten different evidence suggesting that it's both.
Okay.
The Hoovers are definitely there because it was their first, you know, it was their home that they died in.
Yep.
And they really
did. They all die at the same time.
A lot. It's a very, very.
Yeah. What? Good question, Kim. Yeah. Was it a tragedy where they all died at the same time?
Say that again.
Was it one event where they all died at the same time?
Oh, okay. So the father passed first, mm-hmm. then the mother, then the daughter when she was an adult, but they all passed for different cardio heart reasons.
Okay.
So they didn't pass all at the same time. It was staggered, but the father passed first, then the mother, then eventually the daughter passed.
Yeah.
But she was an adult when she passed. Mm-hmm. And so lots of interesting activity. And they, you know, James has sent me, you know, photographic evidence of things that they've captured since then, but lots of personal experiences. And of course it always happens when you don't have anything on, don't have anything running. The only thing that I actually was able to capture and document was the table tipping. And that's because I was like, okay, if we're going to do this, I'm going to videotape it for my web series so that people understand what I'm talking about and can see it for themselves. Mm-hmm. So that was like the first part of my trip. And then I spent the next 3 days in the Lake Champlain area. The first day was Port Henry, which is on the New York side. I met up with some champ enthusiasts.
No, champ, you said is some kind of a, like a Loch Ness. Lake Monster.
It's a lake monster of some kind. I'm not really, from some of the photographs, you could say it is a plesiosaur type creature, but until we have more evidence, I'm just classifying it as a marine reptile.
So you left the Gettysburg area and went to this lake?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Is there a season for Gettysburg when the activity is, like, does activity revolve around dates where they had wars, battles?
In Gettysburg, they do say that the activity spikes around the 4th of July, which is when the battles, you know, was fought there. But really, year round, you get activity, no matter what time of the year it is, or what time of day it is. Depending on the location that you're in, you can do investigations and get lots of activity. I would say during the summertime, it's probably a little bit better because you have a longer period of time because the parks are open from dawn till dusk. So with dusk being sometimes not till 10:30 or so at night, you can stay in the parks longer and do more. And usually, like, when you're out there later in the day, later in the evening, that's pretty much what, you know, when all the paranormal investigators go. And so you don't have as many tourists walking around posing with statues, monuments, kids running around making noises. Typically everybody's back at, you know, the hotels, either turning in for the night or at the restaurants eating.
Right.
Or getting ready for the ghost walks that are up and down, you know, the local streets.
Brandon, had you been to the area, Gettysburg?
I have not. That's definitely on my bucket list.
Oh yeah,
definitely go. Definitely go. I've been there probably six times.
Oh wow!
Since I turned 21, so it's the monuments are really, really nice. And like this time we went and there was we happened to turn down a different road. And I found a whole like new system of you can easily spend a day just driving around through the different monuments and looking for different stuff. Hotspot wise, I would say definitely check out Devil's Den and Little Round Top. Those are hotbeds of activity, but really anywhere along there, all the fields. Most of the fields around Gettysburg.
Some good tips for the viewers and listeners that are going there. I know, Brandon, you had at least one or two of your team members that had gone down to the Gettysburg area.
Yeah, they had. I think they've gotten recordings of like the sound of like a cannon or something going or gunworks going off.
You didn't hear any of that? That's definitely on my bucket list. Any booms?
No. No, I didn't hear any booms, but what we did hear was a, like I said, it was a horror soundtrack for cicadas because.
Oh yeah.
When I actually the first day afternoon that I drove into Gettysburg from Waynesboro, I was hearing this loud droning sound. And I thought, oh God, something's wrong with my truck. So I pulled it over, turned it off. And then I could still hear the droning and I'm like, oh, that does. And it would go from like a low hum all the way up to like if you had a dirt boat. They were so loud. It was crazy.
Okay. Yeah, that's spooky enough. All right. I wanted to cover a little bit about Gettysburg. I didn't want to just because there's so much that can happen there. So now you moved on to the Lake Champlain.
Yeah,
how you say it?
Yeah, Lake Champlain. I was in Port Henry first. Like I said, I met up with the Champ outpost, or the home Champ people, and they took me out of Port Henry to all because there's a couple of different areas. There's one where they keep the float for the Champ Day parade, and there's a beachside champ who looks like he's coming up out of sand, There's a huge welcome board that shows all the different champ sightings that have occurred and that they've documented since the 1800s. So that was really quite interesting. And then from there, I drove up to St. Albans, Vermont. And that's where the trip kind of takes a pointer. All the experiments and research I was hoping to accomplish while I was there, it was very hard. And it was going to be very hard to do anything because there was another person who became dependent upon my vehicle and me driving them around. And whenever I get my experiments set up to do that right there at the bay, they would come and interrupt me and wanted me to take them back to the store for various things. And so by the third time that this happened, I was pretty much at my patience end. And I decided, okay, because there was other people who were supposed to show up for the investigation, I was contacting them on my own. And in this area that we were in, not a whole lot of Wi-Fi or cell phone service. So communications were very limited. And it wasn't until I got into my next area, which was Herkimer, New York, that I was actually able to correspond with the other researchers. And they told me that they had notified this other person at least 3 weeks ahead of time that they weren't coming. And he kept this information from me. And so to me, that part of the trip was kind of a waste because I had invested in a lot of equipment, different kayaks, not knowing which one I would need, but I ended up taking the 8-foot with me because it fit in the back of my truck. Fuel, food, accessories for the dogs to keep them comfortable. All things, I would have happily stayed just in Fort Henry and done my investigations from there because I had, people that I knew there who probably could have helped me out a lot more. But going all the way up to St. Albans, the base camp was only a half mile from the Canadian border.
Oh. Didn't you want to you wanted to do some underwater filming, didn't you?
I did, and I had built a special camera trap for that.
Yeah.
But the locations that we had access to in St. Albans Bay really weren't, it wasn't anywhere that you were going to get any actual documentation of anything without being able to see it with your own eyes. So, even trying to launch my kayak was a effort in ridiculousness because I couldn't even get the opportunity. Like I said, as soon as I would get one of my cameras set up or start getting a recording device going, I would be interrupted and the person would be demanding to go to the store so that they could get something for their own equipment. And I'm like, why didn't you make a list last night? So this morning when I took you to Walmart, you could do this. You could get everything you needed in one swoop. And no, instead I have to keep, stopping what I'm doing in order to take you somewhere. And it's not just a matter of, throwing everything back in the truck and driving. No, I have to put the dogs back in their crate. I have to put my, expensive camera. I had a $500 camera with me that, it's going to be shut down properly. It's going to be put back in its protective case. It's going to be stored properly in the vehicle. And these are all protocols that I'm going to follow because I don't want to have $500 go be ruined. So it was very frustrating to do any type of experiments of my own there. Hopefully next year I have been invited by the people who run the Champ Days to come and do a meet and greet there. So hopefully I can just set up base in the Port Henry area and get my evidence and experiments done there.
Yeah. Did you also have an event where you lectured since we seen you last?
No, that will be this coming weekend.
Okay.
I've done lots of Zoom presentations and lots of in-person presentations at libraries, but my first big CryptoCon of the year will be this Saturday at Ann Arbor.
Well, if you're ever in our area in a library, let us know. Brandon and I like to attend things like that. That's how we met, was at a book signing that we went to years ago. So yeah, if you're in our area, let us know for sure. You're just out of our area for teaching your class, really. I'm a little bit farther than I'd want to go.
Hastings. Well, the closest I got to you guys was Hastings. But it's, I'm always trying to add to the calendar. Definitely going to restructure for next year, though, because I've realized that the schedule that I'm maintaining this year, it's kind of difficult to work in, trips. And part of my job as the managing writer for Squatch GQ Magazine Inc. is to be able to travel to different locations and actually do investigations there on my own.
Yeah, we want to talk about that a little bit because, like I said, you're an award-winning journalist. I know it was been frustrating maybe before that. I know editing can be frustrating, or they change something that you wrote, they change it. But I know there can be a lot of frustration, but I think you're reaping some of the rewards lately. Writer of the year, isn't that what
the great thing about Squatch? The great thing about Squatch GQ is, as the managing writer, I have complete control over that. And the only tweaking the editor, my boss, does is he might add in a few more pictures to enhance the story. But really, however I send him the stories is how it goes into the magazine. And so I love that aspect of my job, that my boss, trusts me and likes my writing style and is great with, just trusting me that let the voices be heard in the story.
Now, all areas are you covering?
Oh,
Bigfoot.
I would say everything under the sun and above, because I'm also covering outer space. It's always a investment in research. Like the past month, I have been working on interviews and articles about prehistoric sharks, because our first issue of Dinosauria is coming out in August, and the first issue is dedicated to prehistoric sharks. So the enjoyment in that is researching these different paleontologists, ichthyosaurus, who specialize in paleo sharks, prehistoric sharks, and everybody says, "Oh, the Meg," but no, there are so many other cool, interesting sharks from the prehistoric that should be covered and talked about. And the fantastic part is getting to meet these people and interview them, and getting a glimpse into the research that is their life's work, and through them getting a better understanding of these creatures and what they were. My favorite is Helicoprion, who had the buzzsaw jaw. He literally looks like, it's called a world tooth jaw, but it looked like a buzzsaw. And this was a 40-foot long shark that could just glide right through the water, buzzsawing his way through cephalopods and squid and stuff like that. So you think calamari for dinner? Well, this guy was feasting on it every night.
Yeah. I love how you can deal with those prehistoric names, those Indian names or Native American Indian names. That stuff that's just so hard to pronounce, and you do a bang up job with it. I saw something online where they had a wine that they named after you.
It's opportunities like that, or like for Watchers magazine, which is Well, repeat that.
I saw the Chetan Noir wine that they named after you.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So that was a complete surprise. a few days earlier, I had a box show up at my my house, and I was like, huh, I haven't ordered anything from Amazon. And I opened it up, and here's this wonderful award that my boss had sent me for being an employee of the year, and like took pictures of it, sent it to my parents for their, oh, this is cool. He had named a wine after me, and you know, it was the employee of the year award wine. So my parents were so thrilled about it. They were like, how many bottles do you want to order? And I'm like, well, how many do you want to drink? You know?
Yeah. So, how many cases, I would think.
Yeah.
we ordered 9 bottles, and it was just under $180 for 9, including shipping. So, but that, you know, I guess bragging rights at dinner from now on. Hey, you know.
Of course.
Yeah, you have to have a few bottles of that on your shelf forever.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. My kind of wine, too, looked like some good red wine.
Yeah, I was happy with that because my dad's a big fan of red wines, Merlots and Cabernet Sauvignons. So I was like, you know, even if I'm, you know, not going to drink more than a glass every once in a while, I know he will enjoy it and drink it down. So works out for me.
Yeah, I'm on doctor's orders to drink a glass once in a while. That red wine's good for you. It's good for your blood. But so you're an award-winning journalist, and we like to feature a couple of your books. Mothman is one of them.
Yep.
And Other Flying Creatures of the Midwest. We didn't get into this one as much last time when you were here as we did. We covered lake monsters a little bit more than we did. And then Lake Monsters and Odd Creatures of the Great Lakes. We covered this one a little bit more last time you were here. But I want to talk about Mothman a little bit because there's more in this book than just Mothman. There's gargoyles, there's thunderbirds.
Yes.
And there again, those big long names that come into play. I have trouble with those myself. And you do a bang up job on those. Then they come up with these screwy names too. I like talking about that. The Snallygaster.
Oh, yes.
Like they were making monsters up to keep their children in the Appalachian Mountains. They wanted to keep their children under control, I think, and keep the people away from their stills. So they made these stories up.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't so much to keep, because there's other tales that they would tell to keep the kids, you know, in the house at night. But the Snallygaster was a legend that they came up with to keep law enforcement out of the woods and to keep people from going and finding their stills. You know, because if you found somebody's still, you could destroy it and say, well, you know, who are you going to call? You know, you're doing something illegal. So, you know, what are you going to do about it? But the legend of the Snallygaster, you know, if people are superstitious and fearful and they think this creature is waiting in the woods that, you know, can set them on fire or kill them with steam or devour them, then most people, you know, are going to stay out of those woods because they don't want to, you know, get hurt or killed. So, this was a legend that the local moonshiners came up with to keep people away from their stills.
Yeah, I can see that working too. And it kind of explains why there's fire and smoke, because it was kind of like a dragon type of a beast, what they were describing. Fire-breathing dragon.
What's that noise?
I don't know what that is. I hear it too.
Like a drum beat.
They got something going on here at the studio. They got music and stuff going on here. We'll probably pick it up on the recording. So you didn't bring any of your team members with you when you were touring around, as far as the because you do ghost research also, right? You didn't bring any of those.
So generally when if I'm doing paranormal investigations with a team, there's a team out of Perrysburg, Ohio that I work with a lot. They are, if I can remember correctly, Northeast Blackwater Swamp Paranormal. Wow. So we just recently were at Randolph County Infirmary, which was actually last weekend. And we went there to do investigations. And for the first part of the night, after it just got dark, all we could hear was fireworks going off. And so me being who I am, I was like, well, nobody's in the basement, so that's where I'm going. And so I set up shop in the one recreation room that was on the men's side. And there is a community kitchen that it opens up to. And then as you come around the corner, it goes into the women's side. So one of the claims is you will hear the icebox rattling. And so as I was in, I could hear something. I went in and was trying to make conversation with the ghost there. Her name, I believe, is Mary. And she was the cook's aide, and then she eventually became the cook, but she did end up dying in the facility. And people leave mementos to her, like coins, money, flowers, old hymnals. So at one point I decided, in order to try to communicate with her, that I'd sing to her.
Oh, good idea.
So I sang her some of Amazing Grace, and didn't really get any activity. And then there was a hymn that I liked. I could only hear some of the clicking going on with the door. I thought, oh, she likes that, but I couldn't remember any of the other verses. So I said, hey, G-O, I'm going to spell it out, because otherwise it'll activate it on my phone. Hey, G-O-G-G-L-E, what is the name of this hymnal according to these verses? And its response, my phone's response, was how to cook pork, which was really interesting because nothing in the question I had asked previously had anything to do with pork. And she's probably seen enough people do a G-O-G-G-L-E search that she decided to ask a question of her own. And I'm thinking she possibly asked how to cook pork, or, because its response was you cook pork at 350 degrees and, things to cook it with. And I was like, that is not what I asked.
No, not even close.
Yeah.
But that's cool because I got a different response. And so that was one of the most unique things that happened to me. It was just, I was expecting, some rattling of the door, maybe, maybe an EVP to show up on my audio recording, and nope, how to cook pork. And the thing that got me is she asked it while I was asking, but the phone answered her, not me. So
how could you hear? You couldn't hear anything.
I couldn't hear anything. No. I couldn't hear anything, but the fact that my phone answered how to cook pork instead of what the hymnal was.
Yeah.
Two very, very different subjects. So I'm thinking she must have communicated with, and interacted with my phone in a way that, she's learned how to, and she had a question of her own to ask. So I'm glad I could help her on that.
Yeah, that's odd. Did like COVID-19 kind of shut your team right down? I know Brandon's team pretty much, they gave up going into homes. Preacher Man that I was doing the ministry with, he shut down. Mm-hmm. Grasp, they went themselves. So, but sounds like you got going again now that you're active on your team. And how about your podcast? Are you doing regular podcasts? Into the Liminal
Abyss? I am just starting to record episodes this week. Like I said, for the past month, I have been tracking down paleontologists to interview about sharks, and also interviewing astrophysicists, other paranormal investigators. So I do a lot of work for the magazines, and then I fill in with when I have to do podcasts or of my own or for other people, and Zoom presentations and paracons on the week. It's like the jar of gravel, sand, and water. You find a way to fit everything in.
Yeah, because you have so much. Yeah. People know where, if they see a UFO, they know enough to call MUFON. If they see a Bigfoot, I think Phil Shaw wants them to get a hold of him. But what if someone sees a dog man? You want them to get a hold of you, the North American Dog Man Project?
If they are in Michigan, lower Michigan or the UP, and you have a dog man sighting or what you think was a dog man sighting, feel free to find me on Facebook and send me a message. And don't really need to send me a friend request first because I don't really pay attention to those. But send me a message on Facebook and explain that you had a dogman sighting and give me the details of it. I will warn you that I have a questionnaire that you have to fill out first before I will start the investigation process. I want to make sure that it is something that is, worth the time and investment to come out and schedule an investigation and, get a team together so that we can, go look to see if there's any evidence. Right. There are steps to that process. So, I don't just take everybody's story with, an open, hey, mm-hmm. give me your stories. Because I do have to do some skepticism in there. But if you have any type of paranormal experience or experience with a cryptid or UFO experience, we do have a new magazine that will be coming out I believe in October of this year called Backwoods, and it's kind of similar to the Terror in the Woods TV series, but we want people's firsthand accounts of their experiences. And if you want us to change your name, we can definitely change your name, but we will put your story in this magazine, whether you have pictures or not, but it's always better to have pictures. I don't care what they said in Alice in Wonderland, pictures are worth a thousand words. We will definitely take people's stories for that magazine and put them in there.
Okay, great. So many people experience something, they don't come forward, whether it's UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, Dogman, and they don't come forward, and so they go unreported, so we don't even know how many reports are out there.
Right.
Now, what makes Michigan so attractive to Bigfoots and other cryptids?
We've got lots of good resources. We have as much fresh water as they could ever hope to find and drink from. And in that fresh water, we've got fish, but we also have a good growing season from, May going into late October with farms and orchards, even wild growing, there's lots of produce for them to eat. Lots of wildlife, we have, our deer population is quite plentiful. So they have, plenty of access. If they wait long enough, we'll even kill it for them and serve it on the side of the road.
Good one.
Courtesy of a vehicle that now has to be fixed, but us humans, we just plow into these, you know, deer, and we leave them on the side of the road, and, you know, every carnivore in the forest is welcome to them. So yeah. they have plentiful food and water sources, and our forests, woods, they have lots of, you know, areas for shelter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Swamps and forests. Yeah. Michigan is really good. We rate high in both dogman sightings and Bigfoot sightings.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because of that, because of the environment, I think we talked about on this show before, I think Phil might have brought it up, or else the Upper Peninsula Bigfoot and research, those guys up there. They talked about music. You think maybe music might be like something that's going to bring us together with these cryptids, like music soothes the wild beast kind of thing? I want everybody to weigh in on that.
So I don't know if music would actually be the communication. It depends on the individual, because you could have a mother with an infant, and if the music is soothing to the infant, of course she's going to stay in that area, because very testosterone filled hormonal male teenager who is going to throw a temper and throw rocks and logs at you, my response would be leave the area before you get hurt. Because obviously it doesn't matter what kind of music you're going to play, you're just invading his territory, and he's now defending. So he's already gone into that hyperdrive of defensive behavior, and nothing that's leaving is going to the point where they are being defensive and making you know that they're there, either by throwing rocks or logs, you know, that type of behavior. That's when you want to leave the area, because obviously this is a creature that's strong enough to do you bodily harm. Why would you want to stand there and provoke it?
That's like
going to onto a football field and taunting the linebackers. Nah, 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 what you gonna do? You know?
Yeah, I think there might be something out there. You know, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that old movie, they use music to help communicate with the aliens. I don't know in the King Kong movie if the music was to soothe the wild beast or not, but it seemed like they are attracted to maybe women's voices or children's voices, is what I'm hearing from these guys, the up north, the UP guys. That's what I'm wondering. What do you guys think, Kim? You think maybe song, if you sing them a song, they might not eat you?
I don't think so.
You don't think that's going to do it?
No. I think, like Shatan said, you know, if you're in their turf and if you're invading their space, especially if they've got young ones, they're going to do everything to protect their young, right? So if you're invading, let's just say their territory, like that is the space that they inhabit with their family core, I don't think it really matters whether you're playing Bach or, you know, Van Halen. It really doesn't matter.
I'm wondering what kind.
You know, it really doesn't. Classical, hip hop, doesn't matter.
Brandon's going to be up there training this year yet, I think. So he may. Yeah, what do you think, Brandon? You going to bring some AC/DC with you?
Well, I might, just because I like AC/DC. It's my favorite band. But.
No, actually, I was talking to, I've been doing podcasts all day. I was talking to a Bigfoot researcher out in Portland, Oregon, Todd Neese. And we were discussing, because a lot of people who have horses, Bigfoots are for some reason, they like horses. And that's why a lot of people, while they're horseback riding, will see Bigfoots, because the horse masks, you know, the smell of the horse masks the human scent. And because you're riding on the horse, the Bigfoots are hearing only the horse walking.
Yeah.
They're hearing the sounds of the horse. And most most of the time the horse's head is up and its neck is up. So it's actually blocking from the front. It's blocking the view of the human. So I think that is possibly why more people get Bigfoot sightings while on horseback than they do just hiking through the woods or driving, you know, back roads.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I know hunters up in blinds see a lot of Bigfoot. See a lot of Bigfoot. We kind of need to move on into the last part of our show. We'll do a shout out to our previous guest. That was author, investigator, Kat Tetson. And we had two co-hosts. My regular co-host had responsibilities. Take care of, they have to work for a living, for one thing, and they have families, so they couldn't make it. But so I had guest co-host Marie Cisneros and Mama Mary Bassett filled in. So shout out to those guys. I know Shatans rubs elbows with some of the big names in the Bigfoot when she was at the Discovery Days. Who's the guy that does all the communications?
Ron Moorhead.
Yeah, big name. And then another gal that was there, was it Cindy?
What was her name? Janice Carter. Janice.
Yeah, a couple of big names there. So shout out to those guys. I kind of wish I could get those guys on the show. And then upcoming events, Shatan, you have some upcoming events coming right up. I don't know. We talked about them on a previous show, but what do you got coming yet this year?
So this Saturday in Ann Arbor, Michigan, is the LL Slugs Conservancy. Different speakers. We will be running from 9 a.m. in the morning till I believe almost midnight. Plenty of vendors on hand, and we will have I'll be one of the speakers, but we also have Ken Gearhart. We have Cliff Bacharach from Finding Bigfoot. We have Igor Bursa from, he's a Russian scientist, but he also is a Bigfoot researcher. Janice Carter, Miranda Young, the ghost biker. Lots of Steve Ward, the She Squatchers. So we have lots of different people presenting on different aspects of both cryptozoology and Bigfoot, both on the natural occurring species aspect and the woo aspect. So if you're interested in Bigfoot, definitely come out and check it out. Like I said, it runs almost all day. So it's definitely worth your while. Other than that, I will be doing the Dewey Lake Monster Conference in September. I believe that's September 11th. The Bigfoot Barbecue UFO Festival in Pennsylvania, September 18th. September 25th, I will be in Wisconsin for the Wisconsin Paranormal Conference. I believe the very next weekend is the Toledo Paranormal or Paracon. And then there's DeadCon in Fort Wayne, Indiana after that. Now, these are just the Paracons. That's not all the Zoom presentations and road trips. And so November, I'll be sleeping. Well, actually, no, November, I have to be active because I'm teaching. December, I'll be hibernating.
October, you'll be back here because we're going to do a Halloween show. We like to have you for a Halloween show and have some fun with it. So I'm looking forward to that. And then we'll discuss what we want to talk about at Halloween. Yeah. So we'll make that one a little bit different. I had this book sent to me, the Feminine Macabre. And you were asked to write in this. These are all female.
I was asked to submit for it, but I just at the time I had so many deadlines, and plus I'm under contract to Squatch GQ now for anything that is magazine publications. So they get all of my and I love my company. I love the company that I work for. So for me, it's kind of a done deal. Now, if I were to self-publish something, she is finding time.
Yeah. You're fading out.
I actually need me.
You're coming in and out. But yeah, so our next guest has an article in this book, and she is Cindy Heinen. She's an investigator for the Society of Anomalous Studies. And we're going to talk about electronic spirit communications device that she has been using and really likes. So that's our upcoming. You know, we don't really have time to get into another final thought. We did the one on music where we all got to weigh in on that. But one of these days, we're going to talk about this weirdo that was associated with around the Mothman sightings, and that's the smiling man, Indrid Cold. One of these days, we're going to talk about him more in depth. And you said maybe he's more UFO than Mothman.
That is the general consensus, is he's associated with the Men in Black, but people really don't know if he was an alien. But there's lots of conspiracy theories that are attached to Indrid Cold. So while he is associated with the Mothman mythos and legend, he's actually become his own separate entity, you know, research-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, he was bizarre. A metal suit, claimed he was from another galaxy, exactly what planet he was from. So we'll get into that another time. But I want to go right into the inspirational thought, and then the show is over. And I picked one out. Of course, I like it to be related to the guest. So I picked one out from Theodore Roosevelt. And he writes, "The farther one gets into the wilderness, the greater is the attraction of its lonely freedom." Now, I think, Shatan, you felt that lonely freedom out in the wilderness. Some of the other Bigfoot people that we've had on, Teresa, some of the others, like I say, Phil Shaw, have felt that. Anybody can feel that. Get out there, do your thing, embrace your differences. Embrace what makes you unique. So that's the show. You're froze up right now. That's the show. Yep. Thanks a lot.
Bye, everybody.
Peace out.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. Located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.